Hello and welcome to On the Corner, the official podcast of PitcherList.com. I'm your host, Eric Samulski, joined, as always, by the man himself, Nick Pollock, as we continue working through his top 200 starting pitchers, five at a time. Please make sure to go check that out if you have not yet. Obviously, you'll get a lot of tidbits in the blurbs in that. Nick put in tons and tons and tons and tons of work. We'll give you a little bit of extra added context here with some episodes that you can continue to check in on throughout the entirety of the offseason. Nick, hey, I didn't even let you talk. How you doing?
Hi.
Hi.
What is happening?
Good.
Yes, we're continuing this on, and really we're continuing the tier of the young upside guys that we are hoping show up. Early in the season, we had Jackson Job, we had Noah Schultz, and now we have number 71. Who is that, Eric?
Yes, number 71, continuing this trend, is Kumar Rocker.
Oh my gosh.
Such an interesting path to the major leagues for Kumar Rocker, who was drafted by the Mets and then didn't get signed by the Mets because of an arm injury, and then wound up getting drafted later by the Rangers, and then there was recovery from the injury. He looked really great in the upper levels of the minors this year. Had a couple starts at the major league level that did not go as well as we were hoping. Was a very trendy streamer at the end of the season because of some really enticing matchups and didn't quite deliver. But we assume, given the fact that he got a shot, that the Rangers are at least going to let him compete for a rotation spot heading into next year. And so why are you bullish? I guess you're kind of bullish. You're putting him in a tier with guys like Jackson Job and Noah Schultz, who are kind of like premier minor league pitcher stashes. So I guess you feel Rocker is similar in value.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're going to see him in spring training. If he gets a job out of camp, I want to give it a ride. I don't like it as much as Job and Schultz, but I feel like it's the next one of, oh, hey, here's an elite strikeout guy that honestly showcased more control and command than I thought we would get from Kumar Rocker. In the short time I saw him, maybe I'm just projecting what I wanted to see, but I certainly felt watching Rocker that he was able to execute as he wanted to and be more, be able to harness what he throws better than most prospects with overpowering stuff when I first see them. And it's a four-seamer slider sinker combination. The slider, I gotta say, I could not believe how many times I saw him execute back foot sliders to lefties. I was shocked. It's something that you should be doing if you are a power pitcher, four-seamer slider guy. Gerrit Cole did this endlessly and actually turned away from it recently. But Kumar Rocker continuously was able to put that slider down and in underneath the danger zone of lefties. That is the bottom left corner of the strike zone. You got to go right underneath that. It's so tempting every single time for a lefty, and they always swing over it and miss. Kumar Rocker slider is ridiculously good. You have a four-seamer at 7 feet of extension and 96 mile per hour velocity. The thing is, terrible. This drops. It's a sink. So it's a little strange. I mean, sometimes I say, hey, look, 14 inches, 15 inches of vert, fine, whatever it's average. I'm willing to overlook that with the extension. When it's so low, it's a little strange. And I'm not sure if I can buy it as much, because essentially it's just helping the barrel catch up to the ball. When you throw that higher up, the less vert it has, the bat is underneath the ball until it isn't when you're trying to swing upstairs. So that might hamper him a little bit. I'm really curious more so about the development. What gets added for Kumar Rocker? Is that a cutter? If you have extension, generally cutter shows up. Generally changeup shows up. And only saw 1% changeup usage in the 11 innings that we saw, 11.2. I wonder if there is something else that gets added for Kumar Rocker. But at the end of the day, the fastball sinker slider combination is still very good. And especially one that is not so wild. You're going to say, Nick, he had an 11% walk rate, two walks and four walks. I know MLB debut stuff. I get it. Trust me. Don't look at Rocker and think, oh no, he's going to have this ridiculous walk rate. No, he was also limited to under 75 pitches in each of his three games.
That's true.
First season as well. It's pretty much all of them were debuts. You can treat it those three games. I see an overpowering pitcher. I see someone who has actually a sinker that he throws the right handers really effectively. It's very interesting to me. And he got that pitch inside, by the way. Arm side location against right-handers 80% of the time. That's 96th percentile if it were a larger sample. You only threw 34 of them against right-handers. But you get my point. He's right there. So I'm excited about it. I hope Kumar Rocker showcases the same stuff that he had and more. And it's very possible that he does. And all of a sudden we go, wait, this guy is just absolute filth. And we go, yeah, he is.
Yes. Filth, people. Utter filth. Really intrigued to see if he does get that shot in the rotation. I think that there's a really good chance of that. And so he'd be somebody that is worth speculating on. I think that the next pitcher, your 72nd ranked pitcher, is far less likely to get a shot out of the gate. But then again, we might have said that about his teammate, Jared Jones,
right,
heading into exactly. this season. Yeah. And so Bubba Chandler may be coming to create a three-headed monster at the top of that Pittsburgh Pirates rotation. I would say that coming into the 2024 season, I feel like Bubba Chandler was maybe a trendier pitching prospect than mm-hmm. Jared Jones was. And so what do you like about Bubba Chandler? And do you actually think that he's like fourth best of this tier? Or do you just like he belongs in the glob with them? You don't really have a preference.
Yeah, I really struggled to rank Bubba Chandler. And I don't know. I mean, guys, the fact that I'm ranking and having opinions on prospect pitchers is still weird to me because I used to just say, like, I don't know, guys. Prospects are prospects. We'll talk about it when we see more of them and everything like that. We have more data now, which is nice, but it's still like, I don't know. And with Bubba Chandler, he throws 96, 97 with pretty much like average to above average shape. It's not the most IVB. It's 16 inches, which is good, but it's not whatever. It's 6.7 of extension, which is good, but whatever. It's slightly flat, 1.2 high adjusted VA. Again, good. And like all of that is above average, which makes it plus together. Mm-hmm. And if he's able to continue with the high location with that four seamer, that should cook if he has the secondaries really to back it up. And I don't know if he does. That's really what it is. The slider is more like a cutter than it is a wipeout slider pitch, from what I understand. The changeup, it seems like it gets too far on the side of the ball to really make that a demonstrative changeup for lefties to fear. Mm-hmm. And I'm waiting for that real secondary to appear that says, okay, look, Bubba Chandler establishes that high fastball. They can't handle this one either. It's just overwhelming. And I don't know if he has that. He could. I would say that the Pirates also, they shouldn't promote Bubba Chandler. I'm still shocked that they promoted Jared Jones. I really, right. truly am. And we'll see what they do. I don't know. You have Mitch Keller there, defiantly. And then you have Elise Ortiz, who they're not going to take.
Defiantly, you have Mitch Keller.
Yes. And then you have Luis Ortiz as the four, very clearly. So that fifth, it doesn't feel like that Bubba Chandler is going to demand that. The Pirates are probably just going to be like, no, we'll just go with this, Toby, and that's cool, and call it a day. But we'll see. Monitor this one. If Bubba Chandler gets a start, like, you should give it a shot and see how it goes.
Yeah. Maybe I'm coming around on Pirates pitching development. I mean, at least in the sense that, like, I was avoiding them totally in years past, and now we're actually seeing them produce some legitimate pitching prospects. Again, I take my cues from a lot of pitching prospect guys that I trust, and a lot of them are very intrigued by Bubba Chandler, and so I am as well. And I would be taking some flyers in leagues where you can bench stash. And he's a guy I'm watching intently in spring training just to see if he feels like he's MLB ready and what his timeline will be. The next guy also maybe battling for a starting rotation job. You might think that your number 73 ranked starting pitcher, Taj Bradley, is locked into the starting rotation in Tampa Bay. But with Shane McClanahan healthy, with Shane Baz back, with Drew Rasmussen back, with Jeffrey Springs back, with Ryan Pepiot there, Taj Bradley is going to have to earn a spot. We saw that magical eight start stretch over the summer where fastballs were located high, splitters were down in the zone. Everybody thought the breakout is here. He looked tremendous. And then we saw those command issues rear their head for Taj Bradley. And I talked about this at First Pitch Arizona. We've talked about this on the podcast before. When we say command for Taj Bradley, we don't mean like the walk rate spikes. We mean the location of his pitches within the zone is imprecise in a way that the way that he wants to attack, or the way that he now wants to attack with fastballs up and the splitters below the zone, which is we both kind of agree is a great approach for him, but it requires the precision of command to keep that fastball up in the zone to allow the splitter to do its work out of the zone low. And when he doesn't have that precise command, he starts getting hit hard. Hitters can lay off the pitches he wants them to chase, and it leads to a lot of poor results that we saw after that hot stretch. And I'm willing to buy shares late in drafts because I see the path forward, but we've just kind of been doing the same dance with Bradley for a while now, and I just don't know if he's going to actually figure it out.
Yeah, the comp that we should be really giving for Taj Bradley is like a worse version of Kodai Senga, because it's four-seamer cutter split, right? And I'm surprised to say it, but the cutter that gave him so much trouble in 2023 actually was the savior of the season for him in 2024 as the really good pitch that induced weak contact. So with Taj Bradley, a lot of times I watch him and just go, he doesn't know where this thing is going. It's a scatter plot of a shotgun blast of four seamers and splitters and cutters. When he was in his best groove, he had the cutter mixed in well. He had splitters actually down in the bottom half of the zone and underneath, and the four seamer in the middle and up, and they kind of combined. But it was good actually of just, hey, look, you don't know what this is out of my hand. This four seamer that looks like it's the top of the zone. No, it's the cutter. No, it's the splitter. That is how Taj Bradley needs to succeed. That is how Kodai Senga succeeds. But the difference is, yeah, Kodai Senga can throw that cutter all day for a strike. He can also get that forkball way down in the dirt whenever he wants. Taj Bradley can't. And this is a rank where I'm just showcasing, I don't want to touch it. Mm-hmm. I don't want to deal with this. This is the hipster, headache-inducing pitcher stifling the entire roster. And this is also where I started a new tier. This is separate from the other guys, the young ones of Bubba Chandler and Kumar Rocker and Schultz and Joe. But why? Because those, you know, you have the understanding early what we're going to get. And even if Taj Bradley shows up and is just like, man, my cutter's amazing. I'm putting my splitter down fastball here. I say, that is awesome. You deserve the success that you're having. I have no idea if that's who you're going to be in like 2 weeks. And that's the problem. That's the issue I have with Taj Bradley. Not that I'm saying he's destined to not help your team, is that we just won't know what his destiny is and more than a coin flip during the season, in my view. And I hate that. It's stress. I'm adding the stress and anxiety of rostering someone like Taj Bradley. In your deeper leagues, you have to go after Taj Bradley because we know he's going to get strikeouts. You know it. And it's harder to find that consistent of a strikeout, supply. I can't think of words today, but Taj Bradley,
source?
I hope it works.
I would go with source. Strikeout
source. Yeah, source. Source is good. Also, by the way, I really hate in like any sci-fi movie where they have some sort of military stuff involved. They always say, we need supplies. Like, it just drives me nuts. You'll hear in every single drama or show, supplies. Oh, yeah, so we need this and this and supplies. Like, what are those? Is it medical equipment? Is it like scissors?
Obviously,
is it bandages? Is it
supplies?
It's just supplies, but like that's just like the blanket word of like, okay, in the script, we got to say that they need things. So supplies. It's what they do. Anyway, Taj Bradley is just going to drive me up the wall. And I hope he doesn't drive you up the wall either. That's all.
Yes. And so I will be avoiding him as well in drafts. The pitcher I will not be avoiding in drafts is next up, but we're going to talk about him after this break. Your number 74th ranked starter was somebody that the beginning of the year we thought was putting it all together. It's Washington Nationals left-hander Mackenzie Gore. We thought it was happening, Nick. We thought it was happening. The bottom dropped out. But did we see enough in the early stages to at least produce a glimmer of what Gore could become, a glimmer of like the path for him to have sustained MLB success? Remembering that I'm looking up his age right now. I remember that he's very young. He's still 25 years old. I know Mackenzie Gore has been, in the discussions for a long time because he was a top pitching prospect for a while, but still a young starting pitcher, still technically not in his peak or prime. Are you optimistic that we could, the flashes of what we saw earlier can be maintained for Mackenzie Gore?
You want to know the weird comp I have for Mackenzie Gore? You're going to hate it.
Well, then no, I don't want to know it.
you actually gave this pitcher as a comp for someone else in our one of our previous podcasts.
I did?
Maybe it wasn't you. Maybe it was someone else. It's Blake Snell. And Blake's, the reason I give that is because the changeup, sweeper, slider all have absurdly good swing strike rates from this past season, at least 17% in all of them, if not above 21%. And he throws them under 60% strikes. And so what happens is that the four seamer has to do it all and it has to be inside the zone. And it's a great four seamer. Right. I mean, this is a 7 feet extension at times 97, like earlier in the season, and then it fell down to 95 by the end, which was obviously worrisome. But it would still be a 12% strike rate and swing strike rate, rather. And if he has those secondaries to help him and actually bait guys into swinging properly, it's game over. He actually is able to just destroy a lineup. The consistency of Mackenzie Gore is what drives us up the wall. It would even be game to game. Of just a ridiculously good start, a ridiculously bad start. It'll be a complete coin flip, headache inducing pitcher stuffing the entire roster. Yes, he is a hipster. So I also am doing this rank. I mean, it's right with Taj Bradley, of course, the same idea of I don't know if you've actually figured it out enough. I don't like these on the Nationals either. I defense really hurt him last season. He has a plus 26 hit luck on the four seamer, which is just, oh boy. And it's because it was independent. You have to realize that hit luck is not focused on the rest of the arsenal. It's just that singular pitch. And because Gore didn't have enough backing up that four seamer, guys were just sitting on it a ton. And then the defense also let him down. So I struggle with it. I think there is premier talent in that arm. I think he's, guess what? Needs a cutter because he's an extension boy in 96. Sorry, a Mr. Fantastic, Eric. I love that, and I just keep forgetting it. I just like saying extension boy, okay?
I know you do.
But he really needs to figure out the secondaries. Mackenzie Gore, man, you gotta have high strike rates on one of these. You have to. It's just that simple, and I don't know if we are. 62% on the curveball?
Mm-hmm.
I hope so. Again, I remember seeing that out of the zone so much in games, and all of a sudden one game, there it is. Yeah. It's unclear, and I hope that Sean Doolittle can help out some more. I also don't like the fact that it took so long for Mackenzie Gore to finally throw some high fastballs, but it was still just at 49% and not 55% high location. Maybe that's a product of him having to go more in the zone, but it really should be going higher with that flat attack angle, this extension, all that kind of stuff. He's missing that extra bit of command and specialization. For Gore, it could be there early on, but it also faded in a big way and went on this past year. Could very well fade again. And I'm just not as confident as I want to be in Mackenzie Gore. But yes, I acknowledge the skills, like the innate stuff is there for him to really explode.
And this is, again, you know, we've talked about this on previous episodes. This is a time in the drafts where you get into these ranks where, like, you're taking these gambles on a pitcher like this, you know, over... you know, some of the more kind of like, you know, people might be like, well, why isn't Sean Manaea ranked up high right now? Why isn't, you know, Brandon Pfaadt here or whatever? And it's just like the upside of somebody like Mackenzie Gore is high enough that you take this gamble at the end of your draft. Again, Nick and I both rank for 12 teamers in particular. You take this gamble because if it clicks, you're getting the starting pitcher you got at the beginning of this year, which was a great starting pitcher. And then if it doesn't, you can just say, okay, it's not going to happen. I'm going to move on. I'll find whoever on the waiver wire. But this upside is worth chasing. I also believe in the upside of your number 75th ranked starter. I have him ranked one spot below Jeffrey Springs. And I'm curious where, I mean, you don't have Springs that much higher than your number 75th ranked starter, Jesus Luzardo. Coming off a back injury that sidelined him for basically the whole second half of the season, I think we have kind of established that Jesus Luzardo is who he is a little bit, or is who he is since he has come over to the Marlins. I think that there was some continued hope that, like, there was another level to unlock. But I think, like, listen, the 3.23 or 3.32 ERA in 2012, a 3.58 ERA. In 2023, basically like a 28 or 29% strikeout rate in those 2 years, with a whip, you know, the whip was much worse in 2023. So maybe you're looking at like a 1-2 whip or slightly lower, that is a viable starting pitcher in a lot of formats because the ERA doesn't hurt you. The whip is like, eh, but it's not awful. And the strikeout rates are really good. And then you've got like trade rumors circling all around him last year. If he's healthy, I believe this is the final year of his contract. So if he's healthy, the Marlins may unload him and then you might get a team context upgrade. I think if people are down on Lizardo because he was mediocre and then got hurt last year, I love taking shares of him late in drafts.
Yeah, so Lizardo is maddening. And really the best asset that he has is the changeup against right-handers, which has continuously earned massive swinging strike rate numbers, 25% in 2000 and in 23 against left-handers, I should say, is 25%, 18% against right-handers across 24% usage in 23 and 22% in the same amount of usage this past year before he got hurt. That is the moneymaker for him. The problem is that the four-seamer and the slider get hit. The four-seamer comes with horrific extension. Mm-hmm. You know, if you guys have been listening to me talk about extension, I think it's a huge, huge deal because it really does aid in extending the tunnel essentially for pitches before batters can really discern which one is which. And if you have a really low extension, I think it just kind of makes a lot of these pitches more obvious essentially. It's essentially like the velocity, but I think a little bit different. And what's so wild to me is that you guys know, okay, Nick loves 7 feet of extension. That's kind of like, oh man, there's a wonderful round number. He doesn't like seeing like under 6.5. So just imagine what I feel when I see that Jesus Lizardo's extension is 5.7.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is why someone who's thrown 95, 96, 97 on his fastball last 3 years has had swing strike rates of 6%. On this pitch, that he gets destroyed. And then you have the slider that he throws far too much in the zone against right-handers, which also just gets pummeled by them. It's a tough scenario because, yes, the slider does do well against lefties. Yes, the changeup does do well against righties, but the four-seamer can't be trusted. Mm-hmm. And also utilizes too many of these sliders. 27% usage against righties, that's more than the changeup in this past season. So I see Lizardo as this sink or swim, prototypical cherry bomb that is now a hipster who is going to give you that 8 strikeout game and then giving you 6 earned runs in the next one. His Hipper 9 for 5 years has been above 8. Above 8. If you see that 8 number, you're like, whip is not going to be good.
Yeah.
Just can't. And the only exception was 2022, which was 6.2 with a 2.54 BABIP. And there's just no way that that is getting replicated. I don't know if the Miami Marlins defense was absurdly good in that time. It was 100 innings of that. That's why you saw the 104 whip. That is not coming back for Jesus Lizardo. And I think this is just, look, if you need strikeouts, you got Bradley, you got Lizardo, you got Mackenzie Gore. Those are your, like, I'm going to sacrifice things, my whip, for strikeouts, and I hope the ERA isn't so terrible. Mm-hmm. That is your play here. But I would be very surprised if we got a massive breakout Jesus Lizardo season where it was just more consistent and more helpful than harmful, because it's just too bad of a fastball, and the slider and changeup don't do enough really to nullify. And the slider just gets hit too hard. Changeup's got to be thrown more. Throw like 40% of the time against righties, okay? Maybe we can talk then. Maybe
probably not. Maybe we can chat Jesus.
I mean, we did chat back in like 2021.
Listen, he threw 11 cutters in 2023 and they were not good, but maybe he starts working that cutter back in, who knows. But yeah, I'm with you on it. I think I would love the Marlins to maybe trade him in the offseason as opposed to waiting, you know, for a bit. He's coming off an injury, so that seems highly unlikely. But I just am suggesting it in the sense of, like, I think Lizardo in a better team context, if you're looking at like a 350 ERA pitcher with a 1-2 whip and good strikeouts who could get wins too, becomes a little more interesting. You play him in certain matchups wherever, but I don't think he's ever gonna reach the highs that we kind of thought when he was coming up with Oakland, like he could hit. I don't think it's there.
I don't touch hipsters. I don't want to draft guys that I will not know what to do with.
Well, I moved out of...
It's too big of a pitcher to drop or something. Like, I don't want to do this.
I moved out of Williamsburg because I also don't deal with hipsters.
Headache inducing pitcher stifling the entire roster. Okay. Oh, we thought of as a droppable cherry bomb last year. That's what hipster is now.
Yeah.
Cherry bomb as you hold on to the entire year.
You do. Just you do it. Nick has updated the terms. You can also go check that out when you go through the full article over on pitcherlist.com. We're going to continue talking about the rest of Nick's top 200 as we go through. Actually, as we chatted at the beginning, we're probably going to get through like 120, 140-ish of these guys on these podcasts. But again, like follow, like watch on YouTube, talk to Nick or I on Twitter. If there are particular guys as we get through, you know, we might do 120 and then take like requests for the 121 to 200 of people that you guys really want us to touch base on. And we can do an episode where we get through like 10 of those kind of guys and call
yeah,
it.
So exactly.
Always feel comfortable reaching out to us on Twitter or Blue Sky. You know, that's just right. Let us know. And we'll try to make sure we talk about as many of the pitchers as you want.
Absolutely.
So that's going to do it for this episode of On the Corner. I am your host, Eric Samulski, the Pelican.
I am Nick Pollock, the Lion.
And we will see you on a future episode, a next episode of On the Corner.